Welcome to the Dave Chappien Show. Gather the children, invite the neighbors over, bring in the dog, turn up the phone, and gather around the radio. It's time once again to demolish Democrats, shame Republicans, horrify liberals, and educate conservatives. Turn up the volume, America. Open the windows and let freedom ring throughout the land. And now, your personal champion of liberty, the paladin of patriotism, the warrior of wisdom, the Neo of the American Matrix, and your host, Dave Chappien.
Good afternoon. Filling in for Dave Chappien. One more day before he comes back tomorrow. Ernest Hancock, hello. He'll be back tomorrow. I want to make sure I told you that, the wait is over. He'll be back. And, you know, it's been a pleasure. I'm glad it was nice of him to give me the opportunity to say hello to his audience. And we want to make sure that today we have some more fun. We had fun yesterday. But I'll give you a chance to call in and give me what? Fur! You know, let's do it. 800-313-9443. So I'm going to give you see if I can do it in 3 minutes here for the first break. A little background on Ernest Hancock. I kind of woke up back in 88. You know, I'm 49 now. I was in my late 20s, 27, 28, and married, four children, two boys, two girls, my youngest at the time. I think she'd just been born. And what the heck? It's an 88 campaign. We have Dukakis and Daddy Bush going at it. And the number one issue, flag-burning amendment. Flag burning. I'm just becoming aware. I'm going to work. I got a family. I'd rather be home. I get done. I come home. I making dinner, kiss all the kids and the wife, play and kind of turn on the news. I'm a responsible American. I'm going to turn on the news. ABC, NBC, CBS, PBS, HBO, CNN, whatever, right? Flip. Same five stories in the same order. And I'm seriously, this is it. This is all I get. You're starting to make a decision. You know, Brokaw and Peter Jennings and Dan Rather at the time and, the McNeil Air NewsHour, and maybe you might get some McLaughlin Group. And so I'm trying to absorb. My father was really in the PBS. They had some stock market show. I can't remember what it was. And I go, really? You gonna believe what they say to all your money? I'm paying attention, and a lot of things happened in my life. And the biggest thing was my father's company. He manufactured touring motorcycle camping trailers. These big gold wings you see with the little trailers. Well, he retired, from Allstate, and he was a big motorcycle guy. But all the stuff that was out there was crap, and it was called the Alcan Traveler. He sold the company later, but he created this. I mean, back then in the late 80s, it was $3,500 for his top-of-the-line, fold-out, change-in-room, bed, storage, tent thing. I mean, it was – and all of a sudden – the Eastern Bloc started breaking up. Europe is starting to say, you know what? We want to take down our trade borders and our travel restrictions so that you can go from Portugal to Spain to France and whatever without having to go through all these checkpoints and so on. It was kind of the beginnings of the, this European Union thing. So people wanted to tour Europe, and they wanted these trailers. These were great. They're high quality. They were, robust. They could rent them, and people go tour Europe in these small streets on their bike and got their room behind them. So he starts getting in magazines. He's doing well. Got to ship it. Let's go ship it, man. We're going America. MK America. Dad, we got, they're screaming on the news every day about trade deficits. It's our patriotic duty to export. So you want to find out some stuff, right? Get some information. Where do you take it and do a sea container full of them to Portugal, Italy, Netherlands? Which one do you go to? I mean, it's all Europe. It'd be like going to South Carolina or Georgia or Massachusetts. I mean, which one's got the lowest duty, right? Start doing some research. What do I find out? Oh, the Omnibus Trade Competitiveness Act of 88. I saw the New World Order in print before I even heard it. Read it, understood what was happening, what our future was. It got me involved. I'll share the rest with you. Or you can call in 800-313-9443. We'll be right back.
Seen any politicians standing up for your rights lately? Me neither. You're tuned to the Dave Champion Show.
Yeah, welcome back to the Dave Champion Show here on RBN. Filling in for Dave, he'll be back tomorrow. Ernest Hancock from Declare Your Independence with me, Ernest Hancock. And I got to tell you, you know, I want to share with you, you know, how it got to where I started, you know, declare my independence. You know, what it really started with is once I started to realize, man, this is jacked up. This is not what they were telling me in junior high. This is not the bill of goods they sold me in the government school system. And I... first thing I did, you go and you read the Declaration of Independence. Okay, let's get it started. Let's get this party going. So I go ahead and I read and I go, ooh, that's good. That's good. Then you read the Constitution. Nah, I wasn't a big fan of that. Bill of Rights, good. Okay, that was a compromise they made with the anti-federalist guys, the libertarians of the day. They're going, what's all this collective power, man? I thought we got away from this. Never even knew at the time. Barely, just kind of almost heard about it. It was a letter or something, you know, this Articles of Confederation thing. Man, they do not want the people to know about that document and what was behind it and what they replaced it with and why and who was behind it. You know, this Constitution thing, I mean, it was all about the collective power up. It put us back on the plantation. Don't think so? Look around. So I'm going, okay, I'm going to give this a read. The Constitution, I could see there was something wrong there. That wasn't no holy document they're trying to make out like it was, because it was all about the power. I mean, you read it without the Bill of Rights. You read it straight through. It was all about the power, the central authority. And I'm going, whoa. And the one thing that really stuck out to me was eminent domain. We had just got away from that. You know, a king, it's all a king's land, and you're lucky you get to use it. And I'm going, so we freed ourselves. And then we're going to give a central plan in Washington total, ultimate sovereignty over the land if they wanted it. Well, then we had the Bill of Rights came back. Oh, whoa, freaking whoa. All right. Well, if you're going to take it, you got to give us just compensation. And then they condemn the land and, you know, make it go down, and they do whatever they want anyway. So I'm just, you can see I'm already, as a young man in late 20s, which these young people, see, I understand these revolutionaries now, these Ron Paul supporters, these young college kids that have been out there and immersed themselves in educating themselves on the truth of things. Because I was them. But it was much more difficult for me. It took years of reading and research and talking and going to, just as, you know, while I'm still raising a family and running a business, I was interested. You know, I didn't go advocating anything. I didn't go out there doing anything other than, you know, challenging at the root cause of this, what I thought was the problem. It was election law. I was Republican. I went independent to get independent status. And I challenged 44 election laws all the way to the Ninth Circuit. Argued before the Ninth Circuit. I'm not an attorney. I go up there and I'm giving it what for. I'm making an argument. It was like 2.5 years before it went to court because they kept putting stays on it. The state legislature, they knew they were screwing up. You know, they got to know. I'm like, seriously? You do this? I mean, you know, I'll give you an example. One example was, in order to register people to vote, you had to be a Republican or a Democrat. I mean, the law said you got to be Republican or Democrat. Then you had to go and get training from the county party to register people the way I guess they wanted you to register them, of course. Then you got a certificate that allowed you to be a deputy registrar. That then you went to the government, you went to the county recorder and elections department, and you said, I want to be a deputy registrar to register people to vote. Then you got your little shiny badge, you go register people to vote. Then you wonder why they weren't, you know, third parties and independents and whatever, because they weren't allowed to register people. So I'm going, seriously? And the reason was it came up was because I had an initiative that I filed to make it very clear what I was looking for. You can't give special rights or privileges to anyone based on their political affiliation, which was kind of the point that I was making, what the part of the lawsuit was about. It was all for press. You know, I just want to make sure everybody knew what was going on. Because what had happened is if you were registering, if you're circulating a petition, then you needed people to, you know, register to be able to sign your petition. You couldn't unless you were Republican or Democrat certified by the party. You had to be one of them, one of theirs. So I'm going, okay. Well, let's take a look at some of the other stuff. And I went through it. It was like 44 election laws like that. And I went, wow. In 1990, I ran as an independent just to get status. I ran as a write-in. Lots of signs. Went there and thought, look at this crazy kid. What is he doing? I mean, seriously, you think you're going to win as a write-in? You know, and you got these beautiful signs. I mean, I was in it for at least a decade. I got my wife to come out and said, look, I'm going to need at least 10 years on this thing. But I'm going to give them what for. Because I knew what was coming. Because the Omnibus Trade Competitiveness Act of 88. We'll get into that in a little bit. So I'm like, how did they get away with this? It was by eliminating competition before it started. If you can make sure, you must choose from communist candidate A or fascist candidate B. Yay. I voted. I feel it was the illusion of choice. That was the message in all the trilogy of The Matrix. If you've watched The Matrix, if you haven't seen it in a while, you should watch it again. As time goes on, you go, wow, man, they were really, really messing with my head. They were showing me some stuff that I should have noticed before. Because the concept in there, there's going to be able to get people to stay plugged into The Matrix. The one thing that to keep people from waking up, to keep them from analyzing what's going on, something's wrong with it, like a splinter in your mind. How did they do that? It was by giving you the illusion of choice. Yesterday we played some movie clips, and one of them from Gladiator, it has Commodus, the emperor, he goes like this. He goes, you know, what do we need them for? And his sister's going, no, there's always been a Senate. You know, allow people there. And he goes, what, illusions? And she goes, traditions. That's all we have now. It's just a regurgitation of a tradition with a little veneer of credibility from some document from back when. Have you actually read them? Declaration of Independence kicks butt. I'm a big Declaration of Independence guy. You know what we did? In 94, we did it, and then we did it again here this last year when one of the broadsides, one of the original copies of the Declaration of Independence making the rounds, you know, around the country, and they go to the Capitol here, and I was prepped for them. Because when they did it in 03, I had them on the radio, and what they were doing at the end of the tour, they do all this Declaration of Independence, therefore we vote, as if voting, you know, has anything to do with declaring your independence. It's kind of like the Second Amendment and duck hunting or something. I mean, you know, it had nothing to do with that. But they made it all about voting. At the end of the tour, Diebold had paperless touchscreen voting machines, getting all these kids, oh, yay, Declaration of Independence and computer vote screen, isn't it, Co? And I went, whoa, what's really behind this? And I started doing some research on these guys and so on. We had some fun with it. But when they came this last year, we made a copy of the document that we had filed as an initiative in 94. And I'll tell you what it was. It's real simple. Arizona's Declaration of Independence as an initiative. What happens when all the people, you know, it gets on the ballot, people, the majority of them vote for it? What happens? Does Arizona declare its independence? I don't know. They didn't want to find out. And what if we did it now? Neil, could you do that? Can you vote? Can you have an initiative to where the state legislature say, yeah, we're good. We're sovereign now. It's all good. We're out. You know, would that be legal? Would F-16 start coming in? What would happen? I don't know. If I did it now, if I filed it now, you wind up in Guantanamo. But let me tell you what I did. All I did was change where it says King George or the King or whatever, and I replaced it. Just put a line through it and then put in bold type, you know, just like you do an initiative. You strike out what you're going to take out and you put in bold what you're going to, or in caps what you're going to add. I put, instead of King George, I put the United States federal government. Instead of these colonies, I put state of Arizona. And every single thing else applied. It was an educational document like you wouldn't believe. So when they got the lines of all the school children, the lines of all the state employees, the lines of all the people sitting there wrapped around the state capitol to go see the Declaration of Independence, what are we passing out? We're passing out Arizona's Declaration of Independence. It's the exact same verbiage of what they're going to go in and see. And all we did was change federal government to replace King George and the colonies with the state of Arizona. And you read that thing and you go, wow, we're in exactly the same situation. Send agents to harass our people and eat out our substance. Okay, powerful stuff. That's how I deal in just, you know, getting in the mind. How I was able to come to this realization was a young man with a blank slate. You know, I kind of had America, you know, going on with Ronald Reagan. You know, I was, you know, he made you feel good about it, you know, because I came out of high school, I graduated in 79. I'm coming into the work market just like my kids are doing now. You know, there's no jobs, there's no manufacturing. Heck, it's a lot worse now than it was then. You know, Afghanistan was in the news, Soviet Union, Cold War, Iran hostages, you know, Iran-Contra, yeah, blah, 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 blah. You know, it's like you can take the same headline, same people, same countries as back then. So your kids would go, well, Dad, you don't understand. Really? Let's go take a look at the headlines from back then when I was your age. I don't know. See any similarities here? You know, that's why they call it revolution. It just keeps coming around and around when the circumstances get right. Well, biggest, giantest, most humongousest bank robbery is going on right now in front of us. But I saw it coming. Because I read this inch-thick log. I was interested. Okay, let me see it. Well, you know, by virtue of authority vested in me as president by the Constitution, laws of the United States of America, I'm this Trade Competitiveness Act of 88 put in Presidential Order 12-661, blah, blah, blah. So I read this thing. It was amazing what even I, without understanding anything about 20-something-year-old, read this and saw what was coming. The government was a gang with a flag. That's all it was. We'll talk about more when we come back because the end is nigh. Now I want you to survive it. We'll be right back.
Life, liberty, and the pursuit of truth. It's the Dave Champion Show.
And sitting in for Dave Champion, Ernest Hancock from Declare Your Independence with me, Ernest Hancock. Dave will be back tomorrow. And, you know, so he's letting me, you know, visit with you for just a little bit. And I just want to give you a perspective from a young activist that's now older. I'm 49. But I started off early, and I got a, you know, I got a dose. I got self-education. I went through. When you're doing a federal lawsuit, You have to immerse yourself in the law. Not that it makes any difference. They don't care about that. But, I mean, you're wanting to do the right thing. You do what's called shepherdizing. You go through – you actually go to the – before the internet, you actually go look at the law. You get in law books, and you're stacking them up, and Supreme Court decisions and appellates and this. I mean, you just – man, I got more dimes put into copy machines and library than I can keep count of. So the thing that I was looking for is how in the heck – did they get away with all of this stuff? Because I could see in the Omnibus Trade Competitiveness Act, it was Stephen Mosbacher was Secretary of Commerce at the time, and he freaked out. And the United States Senator here in Arizona that had an aide, a guy named Tim Carlsgaard, was working for Dennis DeConcini at the time. And Dennis had his own problems, whatever, I didn't care. You know, I'm a constituent, man, help me out here. Well, they were willing to help because, of course, he was Democrat, so he's against the Bush administration, and they're, you know, it's a partisan thing. You know, at first, as a young kid, I'm going, oh, wow, he really wants to get this fixed. Well, hey, man, you know, yeah, let me use your fax machine and your op, and I'll go to Washington, I'll meet with kind of, you know, let's get it taken care of. They didn't care. They were part of it. They just wanted their cut. You know, so I started figuring that out pretty quick, too. So I'm going, all right. It only took me a few months to, you know, kind of really get what was going on. But the Omnibus Trade Competitiveness Act, you read that straight through, and man, you saw a struck, might as well have been a 10-year plan from the Soviet Union. You know, it wasn't even five. It was like the rest of your life. So I could see what was happening. Well, it expired, you know, Clinton put it back in, took it out, put it back in. I mean, it's just they keep, you know, twisting the dials on this thing because what it was about is that they wanted to have the central authority, the banks, the whoever, to be able to control the economy on a global scale just like they use the tax code to control you to create big buckets of money that they rip off later. I'm a young guy. I can see this. I mean, I can read it. You know, it says it does this. And if you already got a mind that you're starting to realize that they're bad guys, you give them any wiggle room, man, here it goes. Well, there was this one guy. I could probably say his name. It's been a while. I remember his name because it was the actor that played Get Smart, the series. His name was Don Adams. And he worked with the Census Bureau. And the Census Bureau is like the parent of the Department of Commerce. And I'm going, okay, there was a lot of information was coming out. And in the law, there was a called a National Trade Data Bank. Now, at the time, the West Germans at the time had started to use what we come to know as the internet. Well, the internet is a Department of Defense thing. And they transferred, you know, big, large files, information between universities and research and whatever. And it also provided a communications network in case of a nuclear attack. It sees a break in communications, you know, and it just routes around it. So it just sees censorship as a break in communications, just routes around it. I mean, you know, they didn't think of this, you know, everybody going mine to mine outside of the government using the government highway system kind of thing. We got to put checkpoints in on the internet. Well, that's what this Internet 2 thing's about, and neutrality and all this other stuff. They want to change it because it's powerful just as much as, like, the road system. We get to go where we want, when we want, how we want. And they're like, oh, no, we got checkpoint for you. Well, that's a whole nother thing. So as a young idealistic man, I understood what question I wanted answered. I saw the enormous corruption that was coming. I saw that all they were was a gang with a flag. They wanted to get their cut. They weren't concerned about, you know, the overall health of the economy or the freedom of the individual or my father's company being able to expand and, you know, and add to the exporting of while they're bashing Toyotas on Capitol Lawn. Remember this? So I'm going, you know, I want something more fundamental. How is it that every single legislator I meet, there was a big scandal here called ASCAM, and I got in the middle of it. You know, they wanted to know how I knew so much, you know, because I'm reporting to some reporters and talking to, you know, some other guys going, look, man, this thing is bad. I write guest articles and say, you know, this is much worse than you realize. It's a culture of corruption. And all of a sudden, the county attorney, when this all breaks loose, they call me in. They want to know how I know so much. And I go, let me tell you how much I know. I know enough to know that you're not going to do anything about it. That's how much I know. It's nice talking to you. Have a nice day. That was it. That's how it works. That's how bad it is. In the early 90s, from a young 20 to 30-something-year-old man with little kids, understanding what's coming. So my goal has always been, even from then, I started meeting the libertarians. Everywhere I went on this, there was always some libertarian around that they were the only ones that even understood what the heck I was talking about and had an answer. You know, I mean, that's where, you know, you start to come to the realization, you know, how can they, why do they, and what, you know, because they can. You want to, the biggest conspiracies you could come up with, they go, Ernie, do you believe that they're this, that, so on, HARP, chemtrails, 9/11, you know, blah, blah, blah. I'm going, yeah, can they? Well, then they are. Was there some moral hurdle they got to go over? Oh, we wouldn't do, we, you know, rape, kill, murder, lie in the war, do whatever, but we wouldn't do election fraud. That'd be wrong. I'm going, seriously? That's how you get access to the trillions and gazillions of dollars. So I'm just, I came at this from an early stage. So I'm looking for a holistic solution, a fundamental fix it. And I know what it is, but nobody wants to really embrace it. They're just now starting to. The younger generation is. The solution is you. You just understand what's going on and stop begging for somebody to rule you or to do something for you. Start being self-reliant. We'll talk about that when we come back.
If you think your government is credible, turn your radio off now. We don't want to upset your fantasy world. The Dave Champion Show.
Ernest Hancock sitting in for Dave, which will be back tomorrow. And I just want to share with you the limited time I have with you yesterday and today. I just want to kind of give you a different perspective. You know, it's how we see everything in print, how I read laws, how I watch the movies, how I discern the real intent behind some of the stupidest sitcoms I ever saw. You know, I mean, it's just a different perspective. And it's once I got it in my head that I could see everything was being orchestrated for more central plan control. And you can understand that, you know, when you're in junior high, high school in the 70s and so on, it's a Cold War, and you got these teachers up there railing against the communism and the Soviet Union and giving you all the reasons why and the deprivation of individual blah, 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 blah. And you're going, okay, based on what? Well, you know, it's just collective planning and there, you know, and then you 15 years later and you're out in the real world and all the stuff that they were saying was wrong with it is exactly what your own government's doing. I mean, what are you supposed to think? And you're supposed to go, well, you know, isn't that what they said was bad? Let me take a look. I'm gonna wipe away all this stuff off my cortex, forget whatever I thought I knew, and I'm just going to read. Now I'm gonna find out. You know, I'll get my own, you know, view on this thing. And I found out if it really came down to if they can, they are. You know, if they can maintain, enhance, or scope power intrusiveness over you to benefit, I don't know, those are the shiny badge, then they will. You know, it's not, I don't need to look at, you know, do you think they would? I don't know. That's not what I'm looking at. Does the technology exist? Do they have the computer program? Do they have the satellite, the military hardware, the whatever? Do they think they can force or coerce compliance? Well, that's what they do. You know, if all you have is a hammer, everything looks like a nail. That's why it's always Arizona. I mean, there's always stuff going on here because if you got a 2x4 with 50 nails in it representing the states, you know, which one does the big bad guys hit the most? The one that's sticking up. Oh, we're always sticking up here. So they're always pounding on us. All right, you know, we get to make goody out of it. There on nethercorp.us, you go to freedoms with an S, freedomsphoenix.com, and you'll see an article up there, and it's titled "The Purpose Behind Engineered Economic Collapse." And what they're talking about is like, look, you know, the manipulation in the market and this and that and so on and how and why and where and who. And we talked about it on the morning show, but it's I'll skip to the part that's the good. Yes, international banks triggered the meltdown, but the greed of capitalism is truly to blame. You know, like it's the Republicans' fault or whatever. Well, this is where you get from the left. You know, they always come in. They got, capitalism, you know, the death of capitalism or what it was, Michael Moore's thing. And it was, you know, they're blaming that capitalism. Heck, I haven't seen capitalism in my entire freaking life. Now, this is what? You know, this corporatism, this kind of, you know, man, we can lock hands on that one, sing kumbaya. Yeah, this corporatism thing, you know, this is fascism. But is the left any different? First off, if you're parroting the fiscal debate points of two-dimensional socialist gatekeepers like Michael Moore, then you're already hopelessly lost in the mind-warping hedge maze of the false left-right paradigm. You should stay as far away as possible from adult conversations on economics, especially if you plan on associating the greed of capitalism and corporatism with the Republican Party alone. Newsflash. Barack Obama received far more in corporate campaign donations, including donations from BP and Exxon, than McCain did. Both Bush Jr. and Obama increased government spending to record levels, meaning neoconservatives are in no way conservative, as a true Republican is supposed to be. Obama has consistently surrounded himself with banksters and corporate lobbyists, including various hobgoblins from the bowels of Goldman Sachs. Both major parties are owned and operated by global banks. This is a cold, hard, undeniable truth of our political system. This is that there's no way around it. Learn it, accept it as reality, and stop trying to blame one side or the other for problems that both sides created. If you cannot do this, your view of our cultural state of affairs will always be horribly skewed, and your insights on our social problems will be utterly worthless. While wannabe socialists desperately clamor to point fingers at the free market ideology as the cause of all our ills, the fact is that none of us have ever lived in a truly free market system. Since the inception of the Federal Reserve in 1913, all markets and even our own currency have become more and more vulnerable to manipulation by the banking elite. We have lived our entire lives in a rigged market, not a free market. To blame the very concept of capitalism for our current dire circumstances is not only naive, it is dangerous. Globalists would like nothing better than to promote the illusion that too much freedom led us to this disaster and that severe controls must be put into place to ensure that it never happens again. I give you the Patriot Act. After 9/11, man, what did we hear? Oh, it's never gonna, it should never happen again. We're going to give up some of our liberties to make sure we're secure because we're afeared. Ain't you afeared? We're afeared. I'm afeared. Are you afeared? This is, you know, and then it goes on. The global banks would never engineer the collapse of the U.S. economy or the dollar. It makes them too much money. Really? This often heard song and dance ties in with the number two comment above. Again, the assumption is that the globalists only do what they do out of an uncontrollable greed for money. This perpetuates a couple of fallacies. First, it encourages the false belief that the end concern for the elite is the accumulation of riches. Central bankers have the ability to print all the money they want from thin air. Remember, the Federal Reserve has never been subjected to a full audit, meaning they could easily create billions, if not trillions, without any oversight whatsoever. Greed for money to them is surely an absurd notion. What they do want more than anything else is social power. They want control over every human being without question. All other concerns are secondary. Why? Because they're messed up in the head. That's why. You know, this isn't complicated. You know, if you've spent any amount of time around government, you've gone through the, you know, request for information, the freedom of information, this, I want to know that. You know, you go and you talk to, you know, these representatives supposed to be representing you and your interests, or at least your freedom, you know, the defense of it. You go to the government agencies for this. You go to the government. That was my first mistake when I first started doing this. I didn't know where else to go. You know, I thought, well, okay, there's got to be a department of, I need to know the trade duty for this country, de la, whatever. You know, they called them the country desk of the Commerce Department. And they didn't, you know, I went through all, and, you know, nobody ever answers the phone. Nobody returns any mail. Nobody, you know, I'm going, what the heck? So I go to my U.S. senator and they started letting me go into their office. See, that's how I got involved in this sting thing. They wanted to know how I knew so much because I'm sending out all these faxes on the fax machine of a U.S. senator. You get some answers then. And they go, oh, yeah, we'd be answering the senator's fax. So I was finding out all kinds of stuff. And I'm going, wow. It got to the point that Robert Mosbacher, Secretary of Commerce, I still have the letter, sent it to DeConcini, warning him, threatening him to get me off his butt. I didn't even do, it was only like a few questions. There was a thing called this Expo 90, you know, that they were doing. It was a big, giant ripoff. I mean, I can go do a whole show on that. You know, this from a young person's perspective, it was obvious. And I understand how these new activists that everybody's been screaming about, where are they? Where's the next generation? Don't they understand? Yeah, they do. They do. They do. And they've taught each other on the internet. It's been peer-reviewed and Facebook around 15 gazillion times, and anybody tries to insert into the matrix, you know, some kind of, you know, blah, 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 thinking it's going to go viral and catch something and everything, you got 15 gazillion, you know, teenagers out there just beat the snot out of it if they know it's full of crap. That's just the way it is. You know, it is all of a sudden the democratization of facts, of opinion, of input. They were trying to beat down. That's why I always said the lamestream media, the media that sued last century. Because I knew in the 90s, the concept of Freedom's Phoenix, the logo, the idea of citizen journalists being able to put it in and be able to categorize it, make use of it and archive it and send it and forward it and email it and participate in it and comment on all of that video, all of that, 1996, we knew what was coming. In 1994, during the campaign cycle here in Arizona then, we had, you know, a bunch of people running governor, and I ran for Secretary of State, and we're doing all this kind of stuff. We were getting rock and roll and whatnot. Had a workshop headquarters, man, we're just kicking butt. And we got our first email accounts. And we started finding out around the country that exact same types of bills, verbatim, were being introduced at the local city, county, state, level, everywhere. They were introducing the same kind of gun control, you know, the new regional governments, more layers of government, water stuff, everything. It was like, it was the same. We were being invaded by a bureaucracy that was putting in place to control us. And we saw it. So we go, how can we use this? Well, you get on the email list. And so that's how we found out about it. You know, Libertarian, we were first to get web pages. We were all over it, man. I remember 1995-96 election cycle for City of Phoenix here. Libertarians, take the web. Because we were the only ones that really pushed it. It wasn't until 2002 that you started. If you running for office, you didn't have a web page. Who the heck were you, man? What kind of campaign is that? 1996, we understood where this was going, and I knew what the trigger would be when you could do video on the internet. Because I didn't understand, and I'm going, how come it takes, I got this one JPEG of this whatever I want to see, kind of, whatever, and it's taken me 10 minutes to download this. What the heck kind of internet is that? Bandwidth. And your 2400 baud modem. So we're going, wow, you're not going to be getting video anytime soon, but it will. When they started doing YouTube, I went to a webmaster friend of mine, and I said, I just need some answers to some questions. Can you do this? You got it. It's all very interesting. I just said, was there a test later? I don't understand all this crap. I don't even know what you're talking about. Is the answer yes or no? Can you? Yes. Okay, do it. Let's go. Freedom Sphinx is born. Because I understood the power of the internet, the power of communicating directly mind to mind. And it changes everything. Everything. Well, let's go ahead and see if we can get some calls. 800-313-9443. Let's go ahead and go to David in New Mexico. What's going on, David? David, I got you. Hey, you guys, push the button. Push the button. No. Well, there you are. Go ahead, man.
Here?
Yeah, there you go. Go ahead, man.
I want to get back to your gang with a flag point. I grew up in a hometown back in Ohio, and there were several other boys my age that all grew up to be police officers of one kind or another, and I saw them develop what kind of fellows they are. And these people, when they go into government service, the government is doing personality profiles to check out a certain type of person for certain types of duties. And these boys were all the sort that they like to play football as an excuse to bust people up. They like to beat people up and treat people badly and abuse little girls and things, you know. And they all grew up to be police officers. But this brings me to the media, and you're always bringing these programs up. There used to be a program called Sledgehammer on TV, and there was this kind of a sociopathic older cop. He was trying to take this young boy under his wing who wanted to become a gang member. And he was telling him, hey, if you want to hang out with the buds and, have some gang colors, be a cop. We'll give you a nice blue uniform. You like gang insignia? We'll give you a badge. And as you move up, we'll put some stripes on your shoulder. And you like to guard the turf, drive through the hood, deal with authority? Well, we'll put you in a police car, and we'll give you jurisdiction. And then we'll even give you the gun. And you'll have the authority to go out and beat people up and push people around. And that show was immediately canceled after that episode.
Yeah, I think it was Sledgehammer.
Sledgehammer, that's right.
And he had this big 50 caliber or something he walked around. It was kind of a comedy, but, yeah, they were making fun of this. Yeah, that's a good point. It brings up – hey, thanks for the call, David. That's a good one. It's good to talk to you, man. You know, the one thing that I thought was – it was interesting when a lot of this was going on was in Connecticut. It was the late 90s, and there was a guy that went and applied for the state police, and he was an intelligent guy. He wanted to serve. He took the test. He aced it. He knew that he's like, I'm the man. I'm sorry, your service is no longer required. I hired a bunch of other guys. And he was like, what the heck was that? And he sued. He said, I don't know what the heck was he sued under, wrongful hiring, discrimination, something. I don't know what it was. And he insisted in discovery. He wanted to understand what it was that these guys that he knew were obviously less intelligent than him, had, backgrounds that were less savory than his. And he's just, had a high self-esteem and opinion of himself. And he's going, they hired these guys and not me, man. I'm going to court. I want you to show me what this was for. What was this all about? And you know what he found out? In discovery, it came out that the Connecticut State Police had an intelligence level by which they did not want you to exceed. They go, he was too smart. Really? Well, they said, once you exceed a certain intelligence level, we find that they don't make good cops. They start thinking too much. They won't just do what they're told. This was their argument, and they prevailed. They go, as long as you got criteria, can't have two smart cops out there. So I'm going, woo. So that brings in, you know, here comes, you know, the law enforcement's going to get seated all over with all these urban combat guys in Iraq that are coming back. Here it comes. Did a little bit of math. Now, check this out. They admit to $1 trillion being have been spent on this war in Iraq. And with all of the military theater and all of the other stuff and the disabled vets and the continued care of the VA, and I mean, I would that number is going to go to the roof. And we started did on the barrel of oil. They said, well, cheap oil, our standard of living and all this other stuff. I'm going, really? Uh-huh. Well, let's figure out what it costs for us to go over there and get cheap oil. And I did the math. And, you know, over a period of time that it had, I mean, just even extrapolating it out over years, it was like it was an extra $137 a barrel of oil we paid on top of that. At the time, it was 60, 70 or something when I did this calculation for the show one time. And I go, we're paying $137 more a barrel? It's just, no, we're not paying for that. We're just, you know, the subsidy. We're the security force. We're the strong arm for Exxon and Texaco. Have them get their own freaking submarine. Put a 16-incher on the Exxon Valdez and defend them own sales, man. I don't care. Why I got to pay for this? So I'm going, this is wrong. This is not about, you know, saving us money or economy. It's about who gets the money. Well, I'm going to give you some stats on what $1 trillion is in this war when we come back. That's a lot more than you think. We'll be right back.
To the Dave Champion Show.
Yeah, and sitting in for Dave Champion, which will be back tomorrow, is me, Ernest Hancock. Thank you, Dave, for giving me an opportunity to just say hello. It's my pleasure. You know, the one thing I did want to bring up is I wanted to make sure that we got, you know, some dollar, because everybody goes, yeah, $1 trillion wrapping around the sun and all that kind of crap and stuff. Yeah, big deal. You know, I mean, tell me something cool. You know, what can I understand about this? I did want, they came up with this $1 trillion. I know it's more than that. It's a lot. It's always more. You know, it's by a factor of gazillion. But I just wanted to do something. I'm going, how many people are working, you know, for this? How much is, you know, has it taken out of us? You know, like they always had the tax freedom day. Remember, it used to be, you know, March, and then it was like April. I remember it went past April 15th. Now you're working for yourself. Then it was May or something. Now they're talking like it's August. I'm your tax burden. What? When did that happen? You know, so I'm going, okay. Well, $1 trillion. How much is $1 trillion? Well, I go, what if we just took and put, you know, $20 an hour? Let's say $20 an hour. You know, there's a lot of people out there. I'm sure you'd be, you know, $20 an hour would be, you know, better than not. So let's go $20 an hour. You're making $20 an hour, you might be able to survive, okay? So that's 50 billion man hours. 50 billion man hours. All right, what does that mean? That means 25 million people working full-time for a year. 25 million people. Heck, there's only 300 million in the whole dang country. So this is just for the war. 25 million people working full-time for a year to pay $1 trillion for this Iraq thing. And how'd that work out for us? The benefit was what? I mean, blah, blah, blah. Yeah, but there could have been, and they didn't. What? I'm what? It's like saying, you know, we got to make a lot of money on cleaning up the Gulf or something, you know, or we had all this money out there, billions of dollars, and they did, and kind of, you know, and we get what for that? I mean, it's the same thing. It's just a big giant, you know, oil spill underneath the sand, I guess. You know, we can say, you know, this is how did our oil get underneath your sand? How did that happen? Well, we're going to take care of that, and we'll install our own little government here, and that's why you always got to have democracy. It's a lot easier to, you know, invade, control, take over a country with a floppy disk than it is a tank. So I go, okay, now we're in control here. We got a government in there, sign this piece of paper. Now the oil's ours again. Is that how it works? Now I'm just trying to get a bead on this. So let's say it's over the 7 years. That means 3.6 million people were working full-time just to fund it, and nothing, all their money, $20 an hour, no taken out, no deductions, no, not just went straight to this war. 3.6 million people. So I'm just, and that doesn't count the interest, you know, with all the debt and stuff to service that. This is, what kind of decision is this? Is it a monetary one? Are we really safer? You know, did we come out ahead on this thing? But they were beating the drum. You know, how many of you were, you know, pounding your chest, yes, go kill some Muslims? And, oh, and Ground Zero. There's a distraction for you, you know. Seriously, you know, this is our number one issue. I remember this. It was 1988. It was called flag burning. You know, I'll tell you, you know, this will anger a lot of my very, very first political action I did to myself, where they really count. I was so disillusioned by that was their big thing. I mean, because I remember flag burning Vietnam and so on, growing up in school and them talking about, yeah, you know, whatever, it's free to do. If it's your flag, is it my flag? Okay, well, it's your flag. You can do what you want with your flag. I don't care. You know, it just never was a big deal to me. They made it a big deal. So I want to make sure that you guys understand that, you know, it's the new issues that they put up to saying that they're the big thing. Is it? Go be free. We need to survive this thing. Dave Champion will be back tomorrow.